All right, time to bring in Chip Towers from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, the AJC.com. Chip, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. Hang on. I'm writing that down. Dave Johnston says that it will not rain during the game
Perfect.
On Saturday.
You got that right.
Just making sure.
Thanks to the trusty iPhone.
See, you've already got your lead for the day, Chip.
Yes.
I'm telling you. This is a really weird weather pattern. And, you know, as you guys know, the weather's always weird kind of around that stadium and the St. John's, which, you know, the only river in America that flows north, I think. Weird things happen around, what is it, TIA Bank Field
right now. Sure, yeah, we'll go with that.
And any rain in the forecast whatsoever, based on what I saw in the Kentucky game, concerns me for our hometown Georgia Bulldogs.
Yeah.
But right now the forecast looks favorable that won't be part of the equation. I'm seeing some 40% forecast on the weather page that I have in front of me right now, 40% chance. But I don't know what time it'll.
Well, yeah, that's
through there.
Digging a little deep into that, it says it's going to rain in the morning and then move out. So hopefully that'll be the 40% you're seeing. But you know, it's funny. You've been down there 1,000 times. The wind blows down there, and it's just it can be a weird weather place. And Logan was talking earlier. I mean, been there when it's 85 degrees, been down there when it's a cool, you know, in the 60s or whatever. So it's just, you don't know what you're going to get. And then you're like, okay, we've seen a missed field goal here and this field goal there. And, suddenly things just get goofy. And that's what I'm kind of wondering that we might have this week, something like that.
Yeah. And I heard you guys talking about the 93 game. I know Logan wants to get off of that, but that remains just one of the most bizarre situations. I don't know if I've shared this with you guys ever before, but at the time I was working for the Athens Banner-Herald, and we thought we were styling and profiling because we went to away games on Billy Morris of Morris Communications private jet,
the old company jet,
on the days of the game. Yeah,
wow.
And so it was wonderful because you get to Jacksonville in about 20 minutes, right? You know, I mean, it's like ridiculous. And then you'd be back home that night to watch the late games. But that weather was so bad. The pilots, you know, we're at the airport and it's, guys, we can't go. I mean, we're not leaving here. And so I did not. That was the only Georgia Florida game. I guess I haven't been to since maybe 1985. So we had to watch it on television like everybody else. And I think I wrote a column from it. Blake Giles from the Banner-Herald had already gone down there. So he was the only one representing our institution down there. And I think I wrote a column about watching the game on TV. But that was just one of the nastiest games. And then, you know, you talk about that streak that Florida had. There were so many weird games. You could tell that Georgia was sort of paying for their good fortunes of the 1980s and 70s with just some of the bizarre outcomes in the 90s. You know, the 92 team was really, really good and loses 26-24. There was that 93 game. I agree, DJ, they should have let that play stand. I mean, they did not call timeout before the ball was snapped. And last time I checked, that's the rule. Once the ball's put in play,
I said, Florida was trying. Whoever that DB was, I was standing right there. He was trying to get the timeout, but the officials didn't see him until the ball had already been snapped.
That's right.
Yeah.
And Zier delivered that thing right in the middle. I can't remember who he hit, but it would have been a touchdown. Georgia was going to kick the extra point, which would have tied it and sent it into overtime. And I'm assuming they had overtime at that point. I can't remember. That might have come late.
No, Georgia would have had to decide to go for two or not.
Yeah, that would have. That's, you're right.
Yeah,
you're right. That was bizarre. You know, the 2002 game still, I think, is just crazy. You know, I mean, everybody remembers Terrence Edwards' big drop in that one. That was a really good Georgia team. Obviously, goes 13-1, but. I remember the David Pollack was it a fumble return or an interception return that he's going to the house with it and he ends up handing it off to one of his teammates in the first half and they called it a forward lateral,
yep.
even though he handed it to him.
That's right. I forgot about that. You're right.
And that was going to be 6 points right before the end of the first half. And instead, Georgia doesn't get the points, and they have to they end up not scoring on it. And then you had everything that happened in the second half. But anyway, crazy things happen down there, and I'm getting ready to leave, actually, as we speak now, packing up the car and getting ready to drive in this rain and arrive to what they're telling me is going to be 89 degrees this afternoon on Amelia Island, where I'm going to end up.
I'm headed that same way later this afternoon, so I'll look for you on the beach, Chip. As if you're not working.
Sliders, right?
Yeah, there you go. That's what I'm talking about. Hey, well, stay with the theme real quick.
That Shannon Mitchell game, that 93 game, 15 catches, 140 yards, the 15 catches in the slop is that's the single game record for Georgia there.
Yeah, I kept thinking when Georgia was complaining about the conditions against Kentucky, I was going, talk to Shannon Mitchell and Eric Zier. I mean, they didn't even the gloves they have nowadays are unbelievably sophisticated. I don't know what Shannon Mitchell was catching with, but that was one of the most unbelievable tight end performances I've ever seen.
Yep.
It was incredible.
Yep.
Well, we've officially said our last words about the 1993 cocktail party. So, at least for today. But let's stay with that theme about just crazy games and you never know what to expect. Because, Chip, I kind of feel like that's exactly what Georgia and Florida will march into this Saturday. I don't know what to expect. A lot of people don't. I'm going to ask you to put on your prognostication hat. Can we expect another one of those crazy, we don't know what we're going to get things on Saturday?
Well, this feels like it, guys. I mean, I got to be honest with you. I mean, whenever there's been a year, and this looks like one of them, where the two programs are closely matched, crazy things happen. I don't think that's that odd because of the environment is very unusual. A 50-50 situation. It's a very momentous game, in my opinion. So, it's kind of like when things start going wrong or well, they tend to accumulate for whatever reason. A great example is 2014. Just a few years ago, and when I was preparing my analysis last night, writing about this, I was reminded of the 2014 game because, the stat, everybody knows, the team that's rushed for the most yardage the last 13 consecutive years has won the game. And that 2014 game, there was absolutely no indication that Florida would be the better rushing team that day. And they ran for 420 yards. That's still, it's like, wow, how did they do that? That was a Will Muschamp team, and that was a real good Georgia team that ended up losing 38-20, a pretty lopsided defeat. And I think that, was kind of the beginning of the end for Mark Richt, because Georgia was – I don't know what the line was on that game. Dave, you might be able to remember it or look it up quickly with all your bookie connections. But
Dogs minus 10.
Dogs minus 10.
Dave knows, man.
I mean, that was just shocking. So, but I think it's because there's so much on the line – and momentum plays such a big part of it. So once you get rolling, it's hard to stop rolling. And once it gets going in the other direction, it's hard to stop that too.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that was like you said, just a maddening game. And that's the kind of stuff we see now. And does it, with everything now that, both teams have had a chance to get healthy. The Gators are getting some players back. I think the Lawrence Cager news for Georgia is interesting. But, going down there, maybe we had talked – well, we probably did talk about this during the summer at some point. But this now has just a completely different feel. Do you agree with that about how this game's going to go?
Yeah, you guys have Brandon Adams on every week, if you'd have asked him to lay a wager on it, he'd have probably taken any number of points, for Georgia. And that was just what the expectation was at the beginning of the season. I still like Georgia in this game, because again, my job is to break it down objectively, and I'm doing that. And, the statistics are decidedly skewed in Georgia's direction. Now, you have to temper that with the, you know, who you've played, and there's no question that Florida's played, you know, a tougher schedule. But I kind of, you know, just nationally, I'm not sure that Florida's loss to LSU has gotten overvalued. That's where I think everything has gotten a little bit skewed, and that's where you see, I think, the differentiation of the national media, which always seems to have some Florida bias in that Northeast, you know, ESPN center up there, in my opinion, versus the Sharks in Vegas, you know, who have not really deviated much off of Georgia in this game. And you know, it boils down to whether the South Carolina game was an anomaly or not. You know, I mean, I think you largely have to throw out the Kentucky game. Now, I think Georgia has overvalued, if we're going to use that term again, the rain factor in the Kentucky game. There were things they should have done better, regardless of the weather. But the South Carolina game, I still think, remains very anomalous from the standpoint of four turnovers and two missed field goals, and you still probably should have won it. Still, you know, so. I just think that's the one that a lot of people are focusing on, and then you see Florida go up there and win pretty handily in Columbia. But you can't ever play the score game, and, you know, Saturday it'll be decided on all the things that football is always decided, you know, the ability to run the football, the ability to stop the run, and turnovers. And you can't ever be sure about turnovers. I mean, who would have guessed that Fromm would have three, you know, against South Carolina? I would imagine the over-under on that in Vegas, if they'd have posted one, would have been pretty minuscule.
Yeah, that would have been a prop bet that we all would have lost, for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Chip, I know Florida is getting Jonathan Green or Jabari Zuniga back. How much sleep should James Coley and Jake Fromm be losing right now based on those two guys?
Well, I think that's significant, fellas. And I say it, you know, they've had Zuniga, and Georgia's actually – done a really good job with Zuniga and you know, certainly last year, and you know, they tried flopping him on either side, and both Isaiah Wilson and Andrew Thomas did a good job. The difference with Greenard is just the standpoint of, you got two of them now. You got them on both sides. They're both healthy. They're both coming back. Now, I don't know the, you know, percentage of their health, if they're 100%, 110%, 92.5, whatever it is, but, you know, generally that's difficult. Now, you're opposing that, you're competing with what's supposed to be one of the best lines in the country. And you can say, you know, I've been bamboozled like everybody else about some of Georgia's problems in the run game with this magnificent offensive line, but I think some of that has to do with this. Well, for whatever reason, I'm not a technician when it comes to offensive line and offense, but I know Georgia runs a zone scheme that is easier to defend than if you're doing some other stuff. And but there has been no real problem with Georgia's pass pro other than the South Carolina game, and that was not the exterior pressure, the outer pressure that you're going to get with a Zuniga and Greenard. That was interior pressure that where Georgia was encountering the breakdown. And I like Georgia's matchups, and they're a little bit better. So, but I still, you know, I still like Georgia. I'm kind of opposite of one of your callers earlier. I was driving this morning and able to listen to a lot of what you're saying, and he was saying that, you know, his mind tells him, his heart tells him Georgia, and his mind tells him Florida. It's the opposite with me. Statistical breakdowns and the personnel. I mean, really, this comes down to personnel. Georgia is not smoke and mirrors. Has out recruited, has better personnel overall than Florida right now. No question about that. It's the other areas, intangible confidence, you know, all those kind of things that I'm not as strong on Georgia with. So, you know, heck, we just got to show up here and let them play it out and find out what's going to happen.
Let me ask you before we let you go: Lawrence Cager, Tyson Campbell, Brian Harrion. What are your thoughts on those three guys as far as what we'll see Saturday?
Well, I think Cager is huge, and I think Cager probably could have come back against Kentucky if they had wanted to. Look, my understanding on him is he's got one of those shoulder subluxation issues, a chronic deal, so it's gonna, it's not gonna go away. So he's one bad landing away from having to be out of the game. Javon Wims had a similar issue his senior year as well, and he's very much like Javon Wims. I think it's a big deal that he's going to be there. I think he's going to be able to make a difference immediately on the field, and then you just got to hope that he's able to hold up, because I do believe he's a difference maker for Georgia. Who'd have thought that at the beginning of the year? Tyson Campbell now is extremely intriguing for me. This is the worst matchup for Georgia, is their receivers, and specifically their tight end, Kyle Pitts, against Georgia's secondary and, defense in general. That's a tough, tough matchup. Well, I'm very intrigued to see how Georgia approaches that. One, will Tyson Campbell make a difference? I think he will. I mean, he is the fastest player on Georgia's team. Eric Stokes may want to make an argument with you about that. But he can run with those burners deep. He's got a toe issue. But I think it's one of those deals. He might could have come back before, but why, test it before this particular game? I think it was always going to be the Florida game he was going to come back. So that's going to make a difference. But the real matchup issue is Kyle Pitts against any team, but Georgia in particular, those inside linebackers, 9 times out of 10, occasionally an outside linebacker and often a safety end up, or your nickelback end up in a matchup with a 6'6", 239 pound tight end who runs like a wide receiver. That's going to be a tough matchup, and Georgia's going to need everything he can get. Brian Herrings is fine as far as I get it. I think we saw in the South Carolina game, you don't need to take that senior running back for granted. He's a difference maker, and as great as Zamir is, there's just things that Brian Herrings can give you right now that he can't. My understanding is he's perfectly fine. We talked to him this week, and he should be good to go.
Excellent. And hopefully we'll get James Cook out in space a few times and
yes.
See how that goes.
You get it, Dave.
Yeah. That's all we've heard about is working on plays in space. So, yeah, we'd like to see a few of those, wouldn't we?
Absolutely. All right, Chip, drive safely today, and thanks so much. We'll look forward to talking to you next week, and it's going to be an interesting Saturday for sure.
All right, we'll talk about it next week.
All right.
Thanks, Chip.
Chip Towers. From the AJC.com.